Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
Woo. 1890-453-106 is our local number. Our text number is 53106. That'll cost you 30 cents. Or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming to you today from the 12 Hotel in Barna, just on the edge of Galway. You've just been listening to Socks in the Frying Pan, They're from County Clare, which is, I suppose, no great surprise. They'll be playing in the Glore Theatre in Clare on the 25th of May before heading on to the Dayton Celtic Festival in Ohio in July. Then they're playing in Dublin, also in Ohio, in August before heading to Canada, Germany and France. There'll be dates in Ireland as well. You should look out for their website is socksinthefryingpan.com, and their latest album, Without a Paddle, is out now. So thanks very much, lads. We'll be hearing from them later on in the show today. We have with us on the stage Esther and Jean. Good afternoon to
you
both.
Hello, how are you?
Both pretty well. And we're coming back to you again from the 12 here in Barna, and it's the 12th's 12th birthday. So happy birthday to the 12th. To celebrate that, they're giving, now this is a prize for the listeners at home, the chance to win an overnight stay in the 12 with dinner in the award-winning West restaurant, cooked to order breakfast the following morning. Also, for people in the audience here, they're going to give away a chance to win dinner for two in the West restaurant here with head chef Martin O'Donnell, uses the best of local produce. And sommelier Fergus O'Halloran will guide you through his award-winning wine list. Their hashtag is 12 is 12. Put that in very carefully on Twitter. When I was putting in 12 and 12, it gave me other suggestions for things that were 12, which they probably wouldn't want to be associated with. And that's all based on the best texts that we get through the course of the next 2 hours. Don't bother trying to suck up to me. You have to suck up to Claire over there. But if you, generally speaking, if you just leave cash on the desk there in front of her, that'll do the trick. Right, so what wines are we going to be talking about today?
Well, obviously it's Easter weekend, yes. And this is a big, everybody entertains and the family come over and have dinner, and traditionally it was always leg of lamb with rosemary and all the trimmings, but nowadays it's anything goes, vegan dishes, vegetarian, fish, there's no set, even turkey has become a kind of a staple around Easter time now. So we've got three wines that I thought we'd look at some of the food and wine matches. We've a lovely Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand, from Marlborough. We've a Montepulciano d'Abruzzo from the Adriatic coast in Italy. And then finally, we've a lovely, gorgeous 2016 Sant'Emilion Grand Cru, which is just absolutely yummy. And that's definitely made to go with the leg of lamb.
Okay. What would go with an old vegan dinner then?
Actually, because vegetables tend to have very strong flavours, you need a wine, like a Sauvignon Blanc, for example, which has a lot of acidity and it's not going to work. You need a wine with more earthy flavours. So actually something like the Montepulciano d'Abruzzo would go, something fruity will go with it. Vegetable flavours tend to be very earthy, so you need fruit to go with it to kind of lift it a bit.
You mean to get the taste out of your mouth?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was a kid who used to, hide the turnip under, and my mother would say, sit there, you're not leaving this table till it's finished. So I'd still be there the next morning, practically, But no, you need something like a Chardonnay. For white wine drinkers, a Chardonnay with all that sort of lovely, buttery, creamy, and weighty texture to it will work well with vegetables. But basically, something with a bit of structure will work well with vegetables.
But doesn't it have to be a vegan wine, though, as well?
Yes, and a vegan wine is a wine where they don't actually use...
wine.
They don't. No. It's the fining. It's how they filter it, and with vegan wines, some of the components, some of the processes used to filter wines contain, animal elements, shall we say. Like, for example, egg white would be something, or, there's sort of various other things. So vegan wines are wines where they actually use more natural, earth-based materials to filter the wine. So no animal-based products are used to filter the wine.
Okay, but you can get red vegan wines and white vegan wines.
Okay,
it's not,
of course.
But you'd probably have to pay a bit more and search around a bit more to get.
No, actually, they're very widely available now. The whole thing is, and I saw a report recently. the wine sales globally are flat. The growth market on a global basis for wine are the natural wines, the organic wines, the vegan wines. There's a whole generation coming up who don't drink as much as, say, my generation, the baby boomers did, but they want, they're prepared to pay more for better quality and they drink less, which is as it should be. So that's very much a trend that's growing on a global basis in terms of what's happening in the wine business. So natural wines and vegan wines and organic wines, that's the future.
Emer says, my fridge broke and I have 36 bottles of wine to chill. I don't have a bath, just a shower, so can't fill anything with ice. I have a book launch in my house tonight. Panicking is not the word.
Is there a pub down the road? Put the wines in, but put the wines in the car. Go down to your local pub, or even go to your neighbour. there isn't really. You just need ice and water to chill it down. Yeah, so your
you
best.
You can buy bags of ice.
You can buy bags of ice. Yeah. You can buy them and put them in, and or just buy a basin and bags of ice. That's what when I'm doing wine fairs. That's what I do. Get a big basin, fill it full of ice, add water, and stick the wine in it. The labels will come off though. That's the only thing.
Well, you're sure they're getting it in glasses.
Yeah, they don't.
And this is one of those book launches where everyone's drinking it by the bottle.
They're not going to be looking at the wine, no.
I need to get an apology wine. I can't tell you why exactly, but believe me, it's not good. All you need to know is that there was a stag, a lost phone, and a bank card involved. This sounds familiar. From a previous text we had. A lost phone and a bank card involved is for a very understanding but understandably annoyed lady friend of mine who favours expensive whites and idiotic men.
Well, I was just in a wine shop on the way down here and I was looking at some nice Chablis. And that is Chardonnay from the Yonne region in northern France. And at this time of year, it's perfect. It's Chardonnay, but without oak. And it's fresh and it's light and it's got the lovely melon tropical fruits. Depends on what you want to pay. You can be really apologetic or you can be really, really,
I think really, really, really is where
apologetic.
We're going here.
And if you're really, really, really apologetic, you will get a fabulous shot. Go for a Grand Cru or a Premier Cru. And I tell you, your sins will be forgiven immediately.
Somebody else says, I need to get some rosé to bring to a barbecue. I hate the really pink, sweet stuff. We don't even know the Matthias bottle du jour from the 90s. What would your wine woman know of any sophisticated pale rosés to keep a bunch of women and men
you
happy?
Are so in luck. One of the fastest growing trends in the Irish market at the moment is Provençal rosé. And that's dry rosé made in the dry style from the south of France. And now nearly every country in the world and every region in the world is imitating it. It's grown on wines such as Whispering Angels or Chateau Miravel. They're all the sort of the big trendy ones. But everywhere you go, you'll find, it's a very distinctive shaped bottle. It's almost curvy, but you will find Provençal rosés that are in the dry style. And most of them are retailing about €10 a bottle. They're in every shop. They're on every shelf at the moment. Rosé 2 years ago was 3% of the Irish market. Now it's 5% of the market. It's the big trend at the moment and it's going to grow. And particularly, on a beautiful weekend like this, this is the start of it. I don't see any sign of it abating anytime soon.
Brendan's wife is quite religious. We're having a fish only meal tonight because it's Good Friday. My wife only likes red, though. Is it bad to drink red with white fish?
No.
Now, apart from pointing out, she'll drink, though, because it's Good Friday. Irish Catholicism for you.
Go for a Beaujolais and go for one of the cru Beaujolais. But what you want is a lighter style, something like a Fleury or a Moulin... No, Moulin Avant's too heavy. A Regnet or a Fleury, those would be the cru wines, which there are 10 cru in the Beaujolais region, and those are the best vineyard sites. And that's, the style of wine, and it's also a very natural style of wine. In fact, there's a lot of natural winemaking going on in Beaujolais at the moment. It's a light, very fruit-forward style of wine, and it won't be too harsh with fish. It'll work fine with fish.
Right. Okay, so what movies are we talking about today, Esther?
We've loads to talk about today. We've got the latest Neil Jordan movie, Greta, which I really enjoyed, but I'm reluctant to recommend too heartily because it is as mad as a box of frogs. It is just really, really out there. Do you remember those there was a trend in the late 80s and early 90s for kind of mad psychological thrillers like Fatal Attraction, The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, and Single White Female, which is a personal favourite of mine, where the the baddie got lamped with a stiletto through the skull at the very end of the film. So they were quite fashionable.
Spoiler. Yeah.
25 years ago.
We get complaints, I guarantee
you. I know we will. But there was kind of a trend for those, and I really enjoyed them. Younger me always got a bit of a laugh out of them. And I think this is Neil Jordan's single white female, really. But he's made it kind of arty by casting Isabelle Huppert, the great French actress. She's kind of Frances Meryl Streep, really. They nominate her for a Caesar nearly every year. She's had 16 nominations. They're the French equivalent of the Oscars. But she's in her 60s now, and she's kind of done a Liam Neeson. Now, she's not trying to kill people on various methods of public transport or anything like that, but she's kind of got this kind of late career surge for playing kind of psycho people. And she is doing it with flair here. She's just really, really brilliant.
Okay, fantastic.
It's about, the working title of this originally was The Widow, actually, until Steve McQueen brought out Widows last year, so it's changed to Greta. But that's what it's about. She's a woman who is kind of lonely in her life, and she befriends this younger woman who's played by Chloe Grace Moretz, but all is not as it seems, shall we say.
Okay, right. And what else are we going to be talking about?
We are going to be talking about Red Joan, which is a really interesting, something I didn't really know about. The Cambridge spies in World War II in England, and that whole world of... you know, there were English people, but the war was kicking off, World War II was kicking off, and there was a growing kind of move towards communism and socialism amongst a certain set in England. And this is based on a true story, an extraordinary true story, of a woman by the name of Melita Norwood, who's a nice middle-aged lady living in Kent, and came out into her front garden one day to find lots of people had a lot of questions for her, because it emerged that she was spying, she was giving secrets to the Russians during the war, and she, like her family or nobody knew about it all this time. And she's played by...
Well, she's a spy, so, you know.
Yeah, she wouldn't be very good at it if she told people, would she? Worst spy ever. That's what I've always wondered about James Bond. Does everyone not know wherever he goes that he's a double agent?
I would have thought that's suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, really. Okay. So Judi Dench plays this character, and it's good. It's not quite as good a movie as you'd expect for the story, is what I would say about this one.
And The Dig?
The Dig is a new Irish film with lovely Mo Dunford, Dungarvan's most famous star at the moment, in the lead role, and it is really kind of interesting. It's from two Northern Ireland brothers. I think it's their debut feature. And it is about a man who is played by Lorcan Cranach, who is trying to find the body of this girl who was murdered years before by Mo Dunford's character. And he has dug every hole in the land, really. He's been trying for years and years. Dunford's character is out of jail. He's done his time. And he is just so tired of not being able to move on at this stage that he decides to try and help him find the body. So this mad connection between the father of the murder victim and the killer, as they try and recover the body. And it kind of plays like a thriller, so it's quite good.
Okay, all right, let's move on to our first wine of the day.
Okay, our first wine comes from New Zealand. It's a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. Interesting enough, the first... Marlborough, which is probably one of the most famous wine regions in the world, it's on the South Island in New Zealand. It was only first planted with Sauvignon Blanc in 1973, and it was a Croatian winemaker called Frank Jukic who had a winery called Montana, which since subsequently got rebranded as Brancott Estate. He was the first person to actually plant New Zealand Sauvignon. Then the man who put this on the map was a winemaker who worked for a company called Cloudy Bay. And the rest, as they say, is history. New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc is a very distinctive wine style. It even has its own day. Sauvignon Blanc Day is fortnight, the 3rd of May. It's the first Friday in every May. So everybody's encouraged to go and drink Sauvignon Blanc. And this actually would be a very nice one to drink. All the wines we have today come from Lidl. They're all this one is part of what they call their core range. In other words, it's always on the shelves. It's the 2018 Cimarosa New Zealand Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc, and it retails at $17.99, which is a very good price for New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, because normally the start price is between 12 up to 14 and even further. What makes Sauvignon Blanc, New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, so specifically appealing is its very grassy, asparagus, very pronounced sort of aroma, tomato leaves, and certainly this wine has all of that. On the palate, there's almost a sweetness, but you get this wonderful acidity, and it's lemon-lime acidity, and, you know, sort of almost green pea and asparagus flavours. We're at Easter. Everybody usually will serve some kind of a fish starter, so grilled fish or shellfish will just go perfectly with this. If you're serving garlic prawns, a particular favourite of mine, this wine will ace the match. For the vegans, you could try Italian stuffed peppers with courgette, walnuts, olives and broccoli. Salads to go with this, you know, one of my favourites is goat or feta cheese with some broccoli and baby tomatoes. We're in asparagus season, green asparagus, avocado, red peppers, anything, you know, whatever you want. This is a crowd-pleasing wine, and at $7.99, great value.
Yeah, can't go wrong for that. Very nice indeed. Jerry in Dublin says, there's no such thing as real vegans. Filthy worms crawl all over the earth where the vegetables are grown. The whole world is infested. Yeah, you tell yourself that, Jerry. We are coming to you today from the 12 Hotel in Barna, with thanks to our friends in Lidl. Esther and Jean are with us up on the stage here. Someone has texted in to say, apologies for not being there today, but Esther, was that you on the train to Galway yesterday talking about Lion's Tea?
Oh, that's gas, yeah. It was actually quite funny. So there was the guy going around with the tea trolley was a lovely sweetheart, say maybe from Eastern Europe. And I said, oh, good, it's Barry's. And he said, will you explain to me the Irish thing about Lyons versus Barry's? And I said, it's kind of like the Dublin Cork thing, hatred of each other through the medium of tea. And, well, I didn't realise there was a few people behind me were listening. They all started laughing. So that was obviously one of them.
Yes. How loud were you talking?
I know. The Barry's drives me a bit mad, it does.
I've been watching the interviews with the cast of the new Avengers movie. They take themselves so seriously. You'd swear they were solving world hunger with the carry-on of them. If they just acknowledge that the movie is simply silly men and women running about in Lycra, I'd have more and respect for them, says Meg.
You said that now, not me, for the people who want to complain, okay? It'll be out, we'll be reviewing it next week. It'll be probably, I don't see any movie grossing more at the Irish box office or internationally this year than the Avengers. It's going to be huge, absolutely massive.
Yeah. And we did get a text earlier on about the family who are going to have fish, but they're going to have wine with the fish. There's no problem with that on Good Friday. John in Dublin says, Jesus and his followers drank wine on the very first ever Good Friday, which became the birth of Catholicism. The Irish law until recently forbid the sale of alcohol on Good Friday, but not the consumption of it. Oh, right. Fair point there. Though Cora in Limerick went one better on that. She says it was a time. No, this is really sacrilegious. There was a time when the Lord and the cross was the only one allowed to get nailed. They're all at it now. Oh, wow. Right, we'll move on to our first film of the day. It is Greta. Here's a clip.
Okay, what the hell is that?
I found it on the train. I'm just gonna drop it off tomorrow.
Oh, you're gonna drop it off tomorrow? Are you insane?
No, Erica, where I come from, that's what we do.
Okay, this is Manhattan. You find a bag, you call Bomb Squad.
Don't open that.
Gross. A lottery ticket. Weird looking pills. Greta Hidag.
Okay. That doesn't tell us very much, that clip.
No, that is, she has found Chloe Grace Moretz's character, who is new to New York and a little bit naive, but a sweetheart, and works in a restaurant, has found a handbag on the subway. And instead of doing what most city dwellers would do, which is called a bomb squad, she decides to try and reunite the bag with its owner. So that's clip there was her and her friend, just played by Micah Monroe, going through the contents of the bag to try and find details about the owner. Mm. The owner is Greta, who's played by Isabelle Huppert, and she ends up meeting this woman in her home and inviting her in for a cup of tea, and it's all very sweet and innocent, and it's worth saying, I suppose, they're women without a mother and without a daughter, because Huppert's character is missing her daughter, who has moved back to France, and Chloe Grace Moretz's mother has died a year previously, so she's still really wrestling with the grief of all that. So they kind of form this unusual bond and connection and this kind of almost surreal mother-daughter relationship with someone like Neil Jordan, who likes always to bring a little bit of the eerie into his fairy tales, really. Mm. And he's always liked that kind of fantastical element, I suppose. You know, he's done it with films like Ondine and The Butcher Boy, even, and even Interview with the Vampire. You know, you're always never quite sure where the lines between drama and the supernatural are being blurred. So this is kind of perfect material for him, really. The reveal comes a little too early, but I'm going to reveal what it is because it's like 15, 20 minutes into the film. She calls around to Hooper's character's house for dinner, and she's delighted with this new friendship they're forming. And she opens press while looking for a bottle of wine and finds about a dozen other identical handbags with the names of the people who found the bags on the back and their phone numbers. And it's like, whoa. Yeah. So she's like, I want, obviously not staying for dinner, wants to get out of there as quickly as possible. And yeah, Hooper is batshit stalker psycho woman. And that's kind of where the movie goes from there. And boy, does it go for it. Like, it just gets crazier and crazier. As I say, it really reminded me of those movies, of, like, Single White Female of the early 90s. And it's a whole lot of fun, though. It's a whole lot of fun. There is one scene, there's a violent death involved. Their limbs get chopped off, people die, people get, you know, put into, you
okay,
know.
Murmur of disapproval.
Put
from
into
the audience.
Boxes. You know, there's all sorts of, and it plays with all those kind of primal fears as well, like fear of being, you know, suffocated or buried alive and stuff like that. There's a lot of those elements into it. Like, it did make me jump a few times in a good way.
Okay.
A true audience film. You're going to be kind of horrified and laughing at the same time. But there is one, like, particularly violent death where she's a piano teacher, so she likes her classical music, and it's used as a plot device quite funnily a few times when people are banging from behind walls trying to get out. Yeah. She'll turn up the music a little, you know, and say, oh, this is my favourite. And there is one scene where she kills somebody really violently and does a little tiptoe dance around immediately following the murder, you know. It's kind of just...
Is she one of those psychos that you kind of like, in a way?
Yeah, she's certainly endearing. You wouldn't want to call into her house without knowing the security codes and the keys and all of the escape routes, but she is a hell of a lot of fun. Hooper is really going for it here. Like, she's 66 now. I think she's at a time of her career. She's made over 100 films, including some great films with directors like Michael Haneke, who she's made about 3 or 4 films with. Like, she's done it all in European cinema, really. She's the kind of princess of Cannes, although maybe Catherine Deneuve might have something to say about that. But, like, she's done it all, and it looks like she's just having fun now. And Neil Jordan's going, yeah, let her go full Hooper, just go for it. And the result is slight. It's slight as hell, but it's a whole lot of fun.
Okay, that's good.
It's the best stalker crackpot movie you're going to see this weekend.
Yeah, if you go to see one stalker crackpot. I don't know what to make of Chloe Grace Moretz. Not that familiar with her, and I'm not that blown away with what I saw in the trailer. Her face seems quite emotionless for an actress, which I would have thought was a prerequisite. No, says Tom.
I really liked her in this, actually, and I thought it's hard to kind of nail a performance when the Hooper show is going on around you, but she brings a real empathy to the character, I think, which is necessary because you won't feel any sense of fear or trepidation for her. You'd be just laughing at the mad French woman going crazy, you know?
Yeah.
So she anchors it really well. I think she's very good in it.
Well, she's kind of done a lot of teen coming of age movie type stuff up till now.
She has. And this is good. This is good from her. And it's actually, it was kind of interesting to watch as well because it's set in New York, this, but it was mostly shot in Dublin. There was the shoot took place over several weeks last year in Dublin. And sure, I'm a mad one for location spotting in a film like that, you know, but I couldn't find or nail down any of the locations. And then I thought, of course, it's an Irish filmmaker, it's Neil Jordan. He does not want his own native audience to see his sleight of hand, you know. So the locations he used really well, and then some of it shot in Toronto as well to give it that big American city feel. So it's a lovely looking film.
Can you please ask Esther if Dancing with Wolves is worth a watch? It's 3.5 hours long. Would I be better off going up the coast for Guinness and oysters? It's a conundrum.
That film did my head in a bit, to be honest with you. I know everyone loved it the time it came out, and it was kind of the Kevin Costner show, but I never really quite got it, and God, it goes on a bit, yeah.
Yeah.
It does.
I'm assuming this is someone in the audience. Siobhan says, Amanda, here beside me, thinks Greta sounds very violent, but can watch back-to-back Game of Thrones. Red Wedding wasn't red enough. Where's the bloodthirsty gore in the audience there?
Hi.
Hi. So what's the difference between Game of Thrones and what Esther just described?
I don't know. Game of Thrones is just, you know, you get caught up into the whole experience of it, whereas that's just 2 hours. Game of Thrones goes on for...
So Game of Thrones is longer.
Longer.
That's a good argument. Yeah, well done.
Years.
Yeah, there we go.
More violent.
That's a winning argument there. And that's the hashtag, by the way, is Game of Thrones movies at the moment on Twitter. I'll try and read out some of those in a while. Somebody else in the audience says, I'm going to see a gorgeous rough collie puppy tomorrow. I'll probably end up bringing him home. I haven't a clue what to call him, though. I'm tempted to go down the Game of Thrones route. Or maybe not. Any other suggestions? Our other pets are called Teapot, Popcorn, and Sushi, says Kathy, who's sitting in the audience. At the same table.
Hi.
Did you? Well, look, ask Game of Thrones woman there. She'll give you a few suggestions.
I don't know. Yeah. Would it age them to have a Game of Thrones?
That's probably true. Yeah. A teapot is, I suppose, an ageless kind of name.
Yeah. But that's my son's cat.
How do you come up? What's the process with saying we'll call the cat Teapot?
That was my son's cat. He drinks a lot of tea, so he called the cat Teapot.
Okay. Not the cat doesn't drink a lot of tea.
No.
Okay. And who eats all the popcorn?
Well, she's that's her dog. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's white and fluffy, like a little ball of popcorn.
Okay. And sushi? Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure. Just sound right.
You'd had a bit of popcorn and tea
I'd
at the time.
I'd had a bit of popcorn and probably wine.
No one
as
can
well.
Quite remember. Yeah, that's fair enough. Another texter says, I brought the five. Now, this was mentioned last week as well. I brought the 5-year-old to see the Peppa Pig Festival of Fun movie during the week. She listens to Movies and Booze with me every week, so I wanted to send in her review. So this is Sive's take. It should be longer. There you go. My own review is that it should have been shorter and they should have served gin in the cinema. Yeah, I know people who went to see it. Blood coming from their eyes when they were staggering out of the cinema. Well, the kids were.
I didn't go to the press screening of that one.
Did you? Is that
I was really busy that day. Is it
review proof, really?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Yeah, there have been a few of them, actually. I kind of like that they exist, though, because there's very little for kids that young in cinema. You know, a lot of the Pixar stuff would be a little bit too grown up for them and adult themes and stuff. So,
somebody's texting in to say, I'm in the back garden with a bag of cans listening to your dulcet tones. I'm having one for each station of the cross. Sláinte. That's Tom Spaeth there with Lydia Klaus, who's duetting with him there. Tom's playing the Roisin Dubh this evening, then we'll be embarking on a UK tour. His new album, Collide, is out now, and his website is tomspaethmusic.com. And we'll be hearing more from Tom and you too, Lydia, I hope, later on in the show. Esther and Gina still with us on the stage here. The hashtag, by the way, is Game of Thrones movies. I've cut off your sausage party. You'd have to know the reference there. My friend Lynn couldn't make the 12 today. She's listening in Chadwick's Builders Providers in Galway with an awful thirst in her. I've told her I'll keep a bottle for her, says Louise. Someone else says, I went to see Dumbo with the kids over the holidays. I thought it was an awful pile of nonsense. It was far too long. The CGI elephant was really distracting. Did Esther like it?
I loved it, yeah. Not everyone agreed with me. It split reviewers right down the middle, I would say. I think it was about 50% on Rotten Tomatoes. I think people liked it for what it wasn't, which was not a live-action version of the original cartoon. It went off in different directions and brought lots of human characters in and everything. And I thought the CGI elephant was the cutest thing ever. I kind of believed he was real by the end of the film. I thought it was really sweet. And I liked that it was aimed squarely at younger kids as well. I thought that was refreshing.
John and Nora says, send a big happy birthday to our son, Aidan. 18 years ago, we bought a pregnancy test kit in the Jervis Centre and we did the test in the loo. He's still costing us a fortune, but we love him. So happy birthday, Aidan. I hope you've heard that story before. We also have something else to give away. Now, this is, with thanks to 20th Century Fox, Tolkien is a new movie that explores the formative years of the author J.R.R. Tolkien and provides some clues as to the inspiration for all his famous books. The cast includes the likes of Colm Meaney, and there's a special preview of the film at the Savoy Cinema on O'Connell Street in Dublin on Tuesday, the April of 30th. We've 5 pairs of tickets to give away. If you'd like to go along to that, we need you to answer a question. What was the name of the main character tasked with destroying the ring in the fires in Mount Doom in Lord of the Rings? If you think you know the answer, text your name, your answer, where you are in the country to 53106. We'll tell you who the winners of that particular competition are at the end of the show today. We'll move on to our second movie. It is Red Joan. Here's a clip.
I got a call in Chambers to tip off from the CPS who'd somehow heard this from MI5. It's utterly ridiculous. You'll laugh. I don't suppose you've heard about a man called Sir William Mitchell who died recently.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they think that he was a communist and might have been part of some Cambridge spy ring. But that's not the funny part. This is. They think that you might be involved. It's nonsense, isn't it? Isn't it? What's the matter? What have they done to you?
It's like a nightmare. Can't believe it's happening, Nick. They put me under a control order.
What?
Sir William. I knew him at Cambridge. We were there at the same time.
There you go. Now, these are middle-class people who went to Cambridge and all the rest of it. What could they possibly know that they could tell the Russians that the Russians would be interested in?
Because they're studying science.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and this woman, Joan, she's kind of not of her time, really. She's in a class that's, you know, nearly completely male scientists, but she's really, really talented. Unfortunately, in the 1940s, what that does is get you a really good secretarial job to a scientist. But she ends up being brought into a really interesting project called the Tube Alloys Project in the UK, which was basically a secretive, you know, a makey-uppy science project where they were really trying to find, crack the atom bomb. They knew other countries. It was kind of 1941. They knew other countries were doing it at the time. There was a race to kind of create the bomb and be first and effectively be the person who held control over World War II. So potentially really, really interesting story here. And it was, this woman was kind of, she befriended, this is a strange one because it's based on a novel as opposed to a true story, but the novel is a novelization of a true story.
Okay.
So if you go back far enough, it's based on the story of Melita Norwood, as I mentioned, this English scientist who, you know, was caught in the front garden of her house in Kent and did come out and do a press conference, in her 70s with loads of journalists in her garden and explained, kind of contextualized why she did what she did. And there's a great central idea in it, which isn't properly explored in the film, I think, unfortunately, which is if everyone has the same, if the same information, is the world a safer place? And that was kind of her motivation in dealing with the Russians. She had befriended 2 Russian people as well. A very glamorous woman by the name of Sonia, who was German born but of Jewish Russian descent, and a man by the name of Tom, who is played by Tom Hughes in the film, and he's kind of the love interest. He kind of is very handsome and very manipulative, and she's a young one, and he's very glamorous, and she kind of forges this sexual relationship with her to try and convince her to sell these secrets to the Russians. So it's kind of played back and forth in flashback, back, and Judi Dench plays the elderly Joan, whose son is a lawyer, and she has never told any of these secrets to anyone, and, you know, it's kind of having to really look at her past and see did she have any justification for it. It's directed by Trevor Nunn, who's a really well-known theatre director in the UK. And it's, you know, it's all there. It hits all the beats really well. The cast are all great, including Sophie Cookson, actually, is really good. I haven't seen her in anything before as the young Joan. It's perfectly nice 3-star movie, but I just feel for the story behind it, it does, it never quite elevates itself, it never quite gives you,
I think it focuses too much on the romance as well. There are two kind of big romances in her life, one with this glamorous Russian Jap and the other with her boss in the Tube Alloys project, who ends up coming under suspicion because of her actions. I didn't really care about the romances. I wanted people kind of whispering into their watches and all the espionage stuff. I just kind of really love all of that stuff, you know. But I wanted it to be just a bit more Bridge of Spies or something. But it is perfectly nice, well-told.
Oh, you are damning this film to
story.
Hell. You really are. Ah, it's grand, yeah.
Well, I've read...
Is it a very British story and you really, you really only care about it if you're British,
It's that very British drama. It's that very British drama. But I know, I think it's a fascinating story. And when I started to look into it, I never knew there was a secret British nuclear race against the Canadians, the Americans and the Japanese to develop the atom bomb. Like, I think that's a story worth telling, you know? Mm. And that there was this young kind of naive woman at the centre of all that who thought it'd be a good idea to share this information with the Russians. Like, it's a great story. You know, but it's fine.
There you go. Everybody's going to rush out and see that tonight, aren't you? I've been waiting for this moment for all my life. Oh Lord, oh Lord. Tom Spaeth there, who you can catch in the Roisin Dubh this evening if you're in the Galway area. We're in the 12 Hotel in Barna with thanks to our friends in Lidl. And of course, it's the 12's 12th birthday. So happy birthday to them. If you were listening earlier, you might be aware of the fact that we are running a competition to give away two tickets to see Stevie Wonder on the 9th of July. God knows what the answer to this question is. But if you can identify the missing lyric, do text into us. Here's a piece of the song. Just because the record has a groove, don't make it in the groove. But you can tell right away in Dr. A when the people start to move. They can feel it all. They can feel it all. Yes, they can feel it all, horsey. If you think you know the actual answer, text the word WONDER, your name, where you are in the country to 53106. Tomás Clancy actually was tweeting, saying he was thinking of going to see Red Joan tonight, but then he was listening.
I know.
He says, I wanted a complex spy thriller. I'm getting nice.
I feel like I've been a bit down on it there. I was playing to the audience a little. I was trying to get a laugh. It's actually all right. It's actually not bad. It's a 3-star movie, I would say. And I'd say it doesn't make enough of a great story, though. That was kind of my beef with it.
Yeah. I know that people have wines from, like, the 1990s or the 1900s and all the different vintages. But does wine ever go off, Simon wants to know. Genuine question. I mean, beer goes off, so why not wine?
Yeah, I mean, most commercial wines that we buy on a daily basis, the white wines are made to last about 2 to 3 years max. The red wines about 3 to 5 years max. They're not made for longevity. Although saying that I remember picking up a bottle and it was about 7 years old and was just a commercial wine. And I opened it and it was absolutely fabulous. You know, that was just, it was a randomer. But the great wines, of which are about 1% of the total global wine market, those are the wines that are made to be aged. They will go on and on and on, and if they're stored correctly, yes, you could still drink them. Now, saying that, many years ago, a whole group of us who used to be in a wine club together, when they were selling wines from, I think it was Farmley or one of the other Guinness estates, we all clubbed together and we bought a Madeira that had been produced during Napoleonic times just to see what it was like. Mm. And it was a 19th century wine. And, you know, between about 25 of us, we all paid a bit of money. And when we opened it, it was like acetone. It was like nail varnish. Ah. So, but it, to even be there and say, like, what was happening 100 years, 120 years ago when this wine was actually made? So, you know, but yes, I've been lucky enough to drink some very, very spectacular aged wines, and they are absolutely magnificent. Yeah,
I have two bottles of Dom Perignon 1990. Where could I sell them, Stephen wants
to know. See, it's very hard. You can't really. But 1990 is an absolute, it's one of the great vintages in Champagne, and Dom Perignon is one of the premium. It's made by Moët, and you know, I would say, do yourself a favour, invite somebody you really, really like and a couple of friends and enjoy it.
Paul and Liam are in the audience, and for the listeners, Liam has gifted us all today with the sight of his beautiful bare legs. We need a lift after the show into Taylor's bar in town. Any space in your car, you're welcome to join us for a few pints. We do have actually an answer to that, lads, because somebody else in the audience has said, I cycled to the 12 Hotel this afternoon in a little wrap dress, and unfortunately my dress did a Marilyn Monroe for the whole 3 kilometre journey, 12 kilometre journey. I was mortified, unsuccessfully trying to cover myself. It was not a pretty sight. I'm wondering whether I should drink enough not to care about the cycle home, or stay sober and walk the bike home, saving my dignity. Now, if you have a bar on your bike, you know, you could at least take one of the lads with you there. Somebody else wants to know, is Avengers Endgame going to be the last Avengers movie in the franchise? I know the name would suggest that it might be.
No, I think they're going to go on forever and ever and ever. No, I think what you're going to find is as the Marvel Universe continues to expand, and you can be damn sure now that Disney have bought Fox that it will continue to expand, because some of those characters are Fox characters, even though they're owned by Fox, even though they're Marvel characters. Yeah. So that is going to continue to expand. Will the Avengers as we know them ever come back? I would imagine so. I would imagine so. But that band of people is going to increase and change all the time.
Oh, crikey.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, it wouldn't be like they'll make a movie where they all go on holidays and it's a comedy.
Like a kind of an Avengers Mr.
Yeah,
Bean.
The Hulk is like sunbathing, you know, when accidentally kills everybody, you know, that kind of thing.
And then they'll all have children. It'll be like baby Avengers and stuff like that. Yeah. It's going to be loads.
Lovely.
It's going to be loads.
Meeting the future mother-in-law this weekend. I've been warned about her by my boyfriend's brother's girlfriend. What wine do I bring? I am really nervous.
Something with lots of high alcohol in it. Make sure she gets plenty into her.
Yeah. I need to make some kind of punch for a little garden soiree I'm having tonight. I have a couple of old bottles of Prosecco in the back of the fridge. Could I use them? What can I use with that? Could you use gin, vodka? Have about a quarter bottle of each. Ooh, quite the lush, aren't we? Yeah.
I tell you what was very fashionable, but it's kind of fallen out. Aperol spritz. So go down to your local offie and get yourself a bottle of Aperol. It's an orange-based Italian liqueur. And you get cut up some oranges, put a little small measure of Aperol and top it up with Prosecco. It's beautiful. And at this time of year, wonderfully refreshing.
And going back to the question we had about does wine ever go off, Ciarán, who's in Ranelagh, says, once purchased, wine should not last more than one night. So there you go.
There's and in most houses,
a voice
it
of
doesn't.
Reason there. Yeah. So let's move on to our second wine of the day. And as I was saying before we actually came on air, the glasses that the 12 are putting this wine in, they're absolutely gorgeous glasses. This is a really long one.
These are the perfect glasses to go with these wines. Yeah. And can I just say, I had a look at the wine list before I came up on stage. One of the most amazing wine lists. And I know that Fergus actually won a Wine Spectator Award a number of years. But because this is his 12th anniversary, they're going to go for 12 awards this year, both for wine and food. And I think he's four down and counting. And I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't do it.
He cracks a nice
one. And given the lunch, that was one of the best lunches we've had in one of these OBs. Absolutely yummy. So well done. Absolutely great. Yeah.
No, it just strikes me when you're holding a glass that's that big, and there's a little dribble in the bottom of it. Are winemakers like taking the piss, basically?
Oh, do you know, I go to lots of wine dinners and wine strips. That's what you get. You sit over there for the night.
Your friends.
Yeah, it's all about the responsible use of alcohol now. Yeah. So let's have a look at this one. This is Italian. It's the 2017 Montepulciano d'Abruzzo, 649. This is Italian, Anotria, the land of the vines. That's what Italy was known as. D'Abruzzo is an area on the Adriatic coast. The grape variety is actually from Tuscany, Montepulciano, not to be confused with a town by the same name from Tuscany, where a wine called Vino Nobile di Montepulciano is made. The name of the Tuscan grape, which is grown pretty well all over Italy, but particularly in this area, D'Abruzzo, which is kind of, you know, southeast Italy. This is just very drinkable. Now, everybody's going to eat posh mainly on Sunday. But, like, let's face it, Saturday, Monday, you'll be eating pizzas, you'll be eating whatever. This is a great wine to go with a pizza or anything like that. You're vegetarian now. Somebody was saying earlier on, what goes with vegan food? This is going to work with the vegan food. Do you know why? Because there's a lot of fruit in it, and it'll go perfectly well with the earthy flavour of the root vegetables that you're going to be having. This is cherry fruit, Nice bit of tannin to keep it supple. Very drinkable. A great party wine or a barbecue wine. Yeah. So after the woman's made her Aperol spritz, go out and buy it at $6.49. It's great value. Go out and buy some of these. Very fruity. You can stand around, and if you're barbecuing whatever, this will go down very well with it.
Paul says, just back from Italy. Every Italian bar was full of Italians. He spelled that E-Y-E. Italians drinking Aperol spritz is the business,
it
says
is.
Paul.
It's on trend, yeah. It was kind of...
They're the colouredy drinks, basically, that you see
it's kind of Daedalo orange.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it had got very popular, and then it was replaced. Negramaros now are the big one now. But I think there's a place for bringing the Aperol spritz back. You know, it's a lovely, refreshing wine, and if we get a good summer again, why not?
Came home recently to find my wife having dinner with my in-laws. Lovely salmon and hollandaise sauce. Yummy, I thought. Then I spotted my wife's choice of wine. I'm not against red wine and fish, but my prize Bordeaux Chateau Lioville Barton 2005. And with fish, what could I do? Join in and enjoy the end of the bottle.
For
divorce, obviously.
Loads of tannin in that. That's not going to work with the fish. So she was obviously trying to impress the mother-in-law, and that didn't work. Mammy's never coming for dinner again, you know.
Chloe Grace Moretz was originally the voice in the kids' TV show My Friends Tigger and Pooh, says Steve.
Good fact, Steve.
Okay, did not know there. And somebody says that they, on Chateauneuf du Pape, that they genuinely thought for years that Chateauneuf du Pape was just made up by Del Boy and Only Fools and Horses. Recently found out it's an actual wine. There you go, it was partier than you thought. We're coming to you today from the 12 Hotel in Barnet with thanks to our friends in Lidl. Esther and Gina are still with us on the stage. Someone wants to know the wine we just had, where's it from again? They want
Lidl.
To know.
It's the Montepulciano d'Abruzzo. It's the 2017 vintage and it's $6.49, which is very, very good value for that. Very drinkable. If you're having a party, if you're having friends over, that's good. That's very good value and it's very drinkable and lots of fruit but with a nice edge of tannin to keep it interesting.
Someone says your vino virtuoso, that's you.
Is that me?
That's Eugene. Said, please drink responsibly. Well, I'd like to take this opportunity to plug my elderflower champagne. I'm brewing a pickle drum in my bathroom. I'm calling it responsibly, as in, please drink responsibly, says JV. my fiance wants to have Barolo at our wedding, and only Barolo. She thinks that it's because it's her favourite wine that we should give to our guests. The last time I had Barolo, I woke up feeling I'd like gone 10 rounds at Mike Tyson. Is there anything else I could suggest to her? She's being so rigid about it.
Yeah, Barolo is a very big monster of a wine. And if you've got Auntie Mary and Uncle Peter and whoever, and they like fruity New World wines, that they, the Barolo's going to blow them away, right? You could go to Barbaresco, which is the region next store, and which is a slightly, it's almost similar to a Barolo, and it's similar in style, but it's slightly lighter. But it's a big savoury wine, and depends on what you're going to have. What are you going to serve? Like steak all round? What about somebody who wants to have fish? Barolo, you've got to look at your audience. That's, you've got to see, there's going to be how many people in that room, and you've got to cater for. So I know it sounds really uncool, but just go for the lowest common denominator that's going to please everybody. And I know, don't mean that in any sort of a snide or rude or snobby way, but just think you've got a whole family there. And do you know what's going to happen? All they're going to remember about that wedding, oh God, that wine. Oh, do you remember that wedding?
Yeah.
So you're holding yourself hostage to fortune there.
But I love that wine. I need to show off to my neighbours at a barbecue I'm hosting tonight. What wine can I get in to absolutely blow their socks off? By that I mean high up in alcohol. Barolo wine.
Barolo would do fine, but I mean, you've got to pay about upwards of €60 a bottle. That's another thing. It's very expensive wine too. There's lots of high alcohol wines. Go to any New World country, Australia, South Africa, Chile. You'll find lots of particularly red wines that are 14.5% alcohol by volume. Some Spanish regions, south, anywhere the sun shines and the grapes ripen. The more ripeness in the grape, the more sugar, so that when you ferment it, the higher the alcohol levels are going to be.
Yeah.
So go for warm climate wines and you'll get higher alcohol.
John wants to know, what's a good wine for a hangover?
Oh, the hair of the dog, the bitches.
He's had his Barolo last night.
No, like really, it's not recommended, shall we say.
No, go for lie down, John. What's the best way to store wine in the garage? I don't have any fancy wine coolers or fridges. The weather is getting warm and I'm worried they'll get damaged in the heat.
Yeah, you see, wine should be stored at an ambient temperature of about between 8 and 10 degrees. On its side, you can buy wine racks in lots of these furniture places and, you know, put them on their side. But the thing is, if you suddenly do get a very hot summer, there's no way you can temperature control your garage. So it's... you're kind of, but it's the same in the house. The house is going to get warm as well. So, and even in the winter when you have the heating on, the temperature's fluctuating between very cold during the day when you're out at work and the heating's off, and very warm at night when the house is an ambient temperature of 21 degrees. So, it, yeah, build a cellar.
Yeah.
Dig that hole in the ground in the garage and build yourself a cellar.
A wine cooler might be cheaper than actually building a cellar in the house.
Or do you know, actually, no, seriously, you can buy these wine fridges, but they tend to be quite expensive. And they will store the wines at an ambient temperature. Now, they are pricey. Depends, like, if it's just everyday or ordinary wine, then you should be okay. But if you've got a serious collection that you want to preserve, then look at investing in these temperature-controlled wine fridges, which are quite widely available now.
We're talking about Aperol. Why not try the Lillet Rosé as opposed to Aperol, as it has 15% of the sugar content, says Anne in Dundrum.
Oh, right, okay. That's a good suggestion.
Someone else says, I see posters for that Shazam movie everywhere everywhere I go. Is it any use? Could I bring a seven-year-old?
Yeah, it's perfect for a seven-year-old. It's really fun. I didn't love it as much as some reviewers, but it is definitely good fun. It's big in spandex, really. It's about a young boy who... through magic, meeting this magic wizard, gets past the mantle of becoming a fully grown, fully fledged male superhero. A seven-year-old kid is going to love it.
Yeah. All right, we'll move on to our third movie of the day. It is The Dig. Here's a clip. Okay, that sounds a bit scary.
Yeah, muddiest movie ever. This is just...
well, it's muck, Irish, isn't it?
The muck nearly splatters off the screen into the cinema. It's a debut film shot in Northern Ireland. Lots of impressive stuff about this, really. Shot in Northern Ireland over 18 days, but has really, really high production values. And that kind of Game of Thrones fan in the audience will enjoy this because it kind of has that kind of... sensory thing of the muck and the blood and the, you know, the sound design. You can hear it all there. It's all kind of ranked up a little, but it came to no surprise to me that one of the two brothers, Andy and Ryan Toohill, even though they hadn't made a feature film before, has worked extensively on Game of Thrones. You can kind of see that edginess to it. And it is, it's a drama about people in purgatory, really, because Sean McKenna, who's played by Lorcan Cranach, has spent 15 years digging hole after hole in the land of this man named Callaghan, hoping to find the corpse of his daughter, who he's, you know, this man's been jailed for her murder, even though he can't remember the events of the night. The killer, who's played by Mo Dunford, he was drunk that night and he has no recollection of what happened. So this man is trying to locate his daughter's body to get some sort of closure. Also trapped in all that is the surviving McKenna daughter, who's played by an actress by the name of Emily Taff. Here's another one, Sean, another Irish emerging talent with about six movies on the way. I looked at her credits and I can't keep up with the amount of people coming through here at the moment. It's a really exciting time and she's really good in it. But she wants to move on. She's had to deal with the death of her sister and here's her dad kind of digging plot after plot around the land and she has a lot of friction with him as a result of that. So Mo Dunford's character is home. He's isolated, he's hated in his community, he's just out of prison. And he really feels that there's nothing else to be done but to pick up a shovel and join in and to try and find, solve this mystery at last, really. So it kind of, you know from pretty early on that this is going to go somewhere you don't expect it to. You do feel you're being set up for some twists. Mm. And that's kind of where it fell away a little for me, to be honest. I can't go into why, but the resolution didn't sit well with me at all. I think other people...
Because it was unlikely or you saw it coming?
It felt like a red herring to me, I suppose.
Right, okay.
But other people will think it's really clever and all of that, but I'd better say no more. As a drama, I think it really works well. I think it's a really interesting story of all these people who can't move on. And you very rarely get a kind of sympathetic portrayal of a killer as well. That's something a little bit new there. And Mo Dunford does that very well. He's got empathy in droves and charisma in droves, and no wonder he's one of the busiest Irish actors at the moment. But I did like it, but the ending for me was a bit of an issue. But.
And so a lot of the time where they're out in fields digging and it's raining. And it's...
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
You'll want to watch a musical after seeing this, I think. Yeah. but it's very well made. It's, as I say, I want to see more from Andy and Ryan Toohill. I think they know how to spend a small budget and have it all up on the big screen. They're obviously very adept young filmmakers, and I think that we're going to see more from them for sure.
Okay, all right, that sounds interesting enough. Somebody's texting in about the Barolo woman who's getting married. Why not serve the Barolo at the top table and a more palatable wine to the rest of the guests, and thus learn that marriage will be forever about negotiation and compromise? More that, to the point.
I think who
a lot of wisdom there.
Give a prize to the prize to that to that person there.
Thing is, though, if she won't back down on this, like your man's must be, he's looking at crikey.
And the
day
price.
Day one.
The price.
Peter, who says he's loving the heat, says one day of heat, never one is having panic attacks about over how to keep the wine cool and building wine cellars. It'll be raining next week and back to the Dutch cold. We are in the 12th Hotel in Barna with thanks to our friends in Lidl. Paul says, because we had a question in about this before, about storing wine, now that we are going to have two consecutive sunny days, I store my wine under the stairs and that has a closed door. It's nice and cool all year.
Yeah, and, well, and obviously as he opens it, he doesn't seem to have any problems with them, so that works fine for him.
Was at a wedding in Ardèche last September and has some fantastic rosé, not like anything that you would associate with the popular rosés here. It wasn't sweet, more of a refreshing taste. Can you recommend something that would be similar?
Yeah, I mean, Ardèche is down in southeast France. It's kind of south of Burgundy and a bit east of the Rhône Valley. And the great Chardonnay comes. That's a region known very well for its Chardonnay. It's one of the emerging regions at the moment. So the rosé styles are kind of mirroring the Provençal styles, which, I mentioned at the beginning of the show, have become so fashionable. That's a very pale pink rosé that's usually made from Grenache and Mourvèdre and Sanso. So a blend of different grape varieties, red grape varieties that are native to that area, and vinified bone dry so that there's no sugar in it, because in that part of France they don't like their rosés to have any sweetness. Whereas if you go over to the Loire Valley, the rosés from Anjou and around that area will all be sweet. That's very much the style there. But down in the south of France and down in sort of southeast France where Ardèche is, it's bone dry and similar to so just go into your local shop and ask for a Provençal style rosé, and that will be pretty similar.
Someone disagrees with you, Esther. They say don't bring a 7-year-old to the Shazam movie. It's very dark at times and dodgy language. I did on your movie buff's recommendation. My 7-year-old is still a little spooked. It's 12 for a reason. It depends on the 7-year-old. With caution, I'd say.
I would say with caution, absolutely. And it's good to remind parents, I think, of the 12A cert there. That is, it's not about censorship anymore. It's about guidance. That's kind of where those figures are going. But if your age, if the child's with a guardian over the age of 18 or with their parent, then it's the parent's decision whether to bring a child to a younger child to see a film. That goes up to 15A as well. But once we get into 16s and 18s territories, they are straight out not suitable for under that age.
And somebody else texted in, a Brett, who's fuming. He says, I hate to be pedantic, but it's not called Dancing with Wolves. It's called Dances with Wolves. I'm fuming here. Okay. Dancing with Wolves would be a good, great TV format rather than, they put celebrities in a ring with a lot of wolves.
Do you think somebody hasn't pitched that at some stage?
The insurance would be astronomical. Michelle says, this year is the 100th anniversary of Aperol. Started in Padua a century ago. I got big into it when I was on holidays in Italy last September. Mostly because in Italy, an Aperol spritz is less than half the price of what bars in Dublin charge for it. No great surprise there. Frank the Yank, who's in Lewisburg, says, I still have a mixed case of 1998 Ducru Bocchello, Louisville Barton and Chateau Montrose. The Leoville still has tannins like steel filings, says Frank. And someone else says, I'm preparing foie gras With Piedmont white truffles as a starter for a dinner party I'm hosting tomorrow evening, I had the most stressful day assembling my wine menu for the party. I need advice for a white, which is light enough that it won't temper the palate before we get to the steak tartare. My nerves. Her name is Prunella.
Okay. Prunella.
Is that a name or is it a disease?
Yeah, what? You're looking at a sweet wine match, and I would go for either something from Neu de Seydeli from Cracker, is one of the great producers in Austria of sweet Rieslings, and that is going to be absolutely beautiful with your foie gras. Or you could go for a late harvest Gewürztraminer from Alsace, or Sauternes is probably a bit heavy to go with it, but anything with a bit of sweetness in it is going to be absolutely beautiful with your foie gras.
Okay. Where would she even get that? Foie gras with
you can get them delicate, you can get foie gras and truffle. I went to actually a truffle sale in, oh God, it was a long time ago, and you know, the truffles are harvested, and what happens is the people who own the land allow the people, the farm workers who work on the land, to supplement their income by harvesting the truffles, because a kilo of truffle goes for about €1,000.
Wow!
Yeah, this was in France, but yeah, truffles are expensive.
A couple of bits of advice for the Barolo bride, we'll call her. Cora says, "Let's say the bride is serving Barolo, so she can weed out the lightweights and have a proper hooli with the stalwart drinkers." I like the way she thinks. They'll be all hocking up their dinner after 2 hours. That's not going to be a very nice wedding. Sarah says, "I would advise that the groom get the hotel wedding planner on his side and get them to help convince the bride that the wine needs to be something most people can enjoy. Also, the wedding day is for everyone attending, and the marriage is just for the two of them," says Sarah. Good advice there. And somebody in the audience has a complaint. "I'm here in the 12 Barna, and I find it ridiculous there are no beard-washing facilities. How am I supposed to enjoy the taste of a fine red with the taste of Sauvignon Blanc in my beard?" Let's move on to our third wine of the day.
And our third wine is an absolute star. And actually, this was a gold medal winner at the Berliner Wine Competition, which is a competition I judged actually in January this year, and I did it the year before as well. It's a great competition. This is the 2016 Saint-Emilion Grand Cru. It's a Lidl wine. Again, it's one that's always in there on their shelves. It's $14.99. Now, Saint-Emilion is on the right bank of the Gironde in Bordeaux, and the town originated in the 8th century when a Breton monk called Emilianus built a settlement there. Soil is key to this area. There's a lot of limestone soil there, and the two grapes that really dominate in this area are Merlot and Cabernet Franc. You'll also find Cabernet Sauvignon, but Merlot and Cabernet Franc tend to be the predominant grapes here. I was there a couple of years ago. It's a beautiful medieval town with all, you know, Romanesque churches, 13th century tower. I mean, it's picture perfect. It's absolutely beautiful. The wines are also very much sought after. Now, this is a young Saint-Emilion. It's 2016, so it's relatively young, but it's still showing a lot of fruit. What I would say about this, the younger Saint-Emilion wines, which tend to be more fruity in style, would be great served with fish or poultry, and that includes turkey. You get the plum fruit, you get the hint of spice, and certainly on the nose, I mean, the spice and the cloves are coming through very strongly on that. There's a nice medium tannin, and there's a good balancing acidity. But If you're a carnivore like me and you're going to have leg of lamb on Easter Sunday with the rosemary and the garlic, oh, it takes forever, and you put it in and you sear it and it's wonderful, with the potatoes and asparagus, we're in asparagus season, this wine is going to be absolutely beautiful with it. So my recommendation for this one is just pure meat. So apologies to the vegans, the vegetarians everywhere. I'm a carnivore and proud, and I'm having this with my roast lamb on Sunday.
Right. Okay, fair enough. Presumably there's no one going for the foie gras, that other Prunella's dinner party either. That would be ox. Does organic wine have sulfites in it? Somebody wants to know.
Yes, all wine has sulfites in it. Some of the natural wines don't. That's what differs them from organic wines. Organic wine is all about what happens in the vineyard, and they try and use the least amount of chemicals in the vineyard where the vines are growing, and they try to keep the soil as healthy as possible. That's all, you know, it's a definition of organic, no matter whether you're growing fruit, vegetables, or grapes. Whereas the natural wines tend to use as least amount of sulfur as they possibly can. And they're quite different. They, you know, they're definitely an acquired taste. I've tasted some wonderful ones. I've tasted some awful ones. I was actually at a Georgian wine tasting about 2 weeks ago, and we had the Quervy wines. These are these fabulous wines. Because the home of the Vitis vinifera, and they have evidence going back to 8,000 BC of the wine being made in this Quervy. So the Georgian producers came over with these Quervy wines. Now, one of the white wines we had tasted like pure buttermilk and smelled like it. And the other one was like, it was kind of a bit like a Madeira, and it had that wonderful oxidative flavor, but it was really fresh. So, and these are all natural, no sulfur, you know. So these are wines. Don't expect this to be a fruity, in your, you know, kind of cheap and cheerful wine. Those natural wines are definitely, they tend to be more expensive, but they're definitely something you need to get used to, because the sulfur, the SO2 keeps the grapes fresh. It keeps the wine from oxidizing. It keeps the wine from going off. But there is a big trend now towards trying to use people going for wines with the least amount of intervention.
Right, okay. What wine would you pair with a cooked pastry, like savoury puff or flaky pastry? I'm possibly going to put chicken and pesto on the pastry, or a mushroomy sauce like a vol-au-vent, but not.
Either go for the Montepulciano d'Abruzzo with all its fruit, which would be really, really nice, or something like a Pinot Grigio, and there's lots of Pinot Grigio from all over the world. Pinot Grigio is quite a neutral grape, and so it doesn't impact on the flavours, because you've got a lot of flavours in that dish, and you've got your pastry and all the right, so, and there's not too much acidity either, so you've got some, you know, creamy sauce in there with the chicken, so the Pinot Grigio will go very well with it. So that's what I go for, either that or the Montepulciano d'Abruzzo.
And Ruth is looking for a nice orange wine, a real strong citrus one, really, but preferably with an orange twist.
Oh, an orange. Well, orange wine is wine where the grapes have been left in contact with the skin to give them the orange. We're again in natural wine country. So there are some Quervy wines on the market here. I know places like Green Man Wines have it. You could try Mary Paul Wines as well. You know, that's where you go. Go to an a natural wine specialist, and they'll be able to give you a recommendation.
Okay. Right. The winners of our competition. Now, the winner in the audience here, who's going to get dinner for two, is Amanda, with her love of Game of Thrones. So congratulations to you. She's looking a bit stunned there. Also, the person in the audience who texted in looking for the name for the dog she's thinking of adopting. A few people actually have texted in to suggest you call the dog Prunella. Makes a lot of sense. Really. And the people who've won tickets to go and see that film about Tolkien, the winners of that are Lynn Worrell, Liam Scott, Adrian Quinn, Eileen Gallagher and Aoife Murphy. And also the winner of the people who are going to come and stay here in the 12 and have dinner are John and Nora, obviously, with their pregnancy test in the loo of the Jervis Centre 18 years ago. Right, we have a lot of people to say thank you to, because our time is pretty much nearly at an end. First, though, where's Niamh? There's Niamh with some good things to do this weekend.
Okay, so in Galway tonight sees the return of one of the favourite festivals to Galway's West End, the Community Scratch Games, and that's scratching records, not backs. So one of the, it's basically kicking off tonight at 8 o'clock. It's going to be full of tunes from afternoon to after midnight. It was originally started in Galway by Jimmy Penguin and Deviant Naive Tend, and it, the help of Manipulate, it spread across the UK and Europe, but it's coming back. It is free and it starts at 8, but it's recommended you get there early as it gets packed pretty quickly. Tomorrow in the Belvedere House and Gardens in Westmeath, there's a bat walk that's for free with Bat Conservation Ireland. It begins with an illustrated talk on bats, dispelling all the myths and detailing how marvellous these tiny mammals really are. The talk is followed by a guided bat walk with the use of bat boxes around Belvedere Parkland. It is weather permitting, but it looks pretty belter out there at the moment, so it should be okay. You are told to bring warm clothing, wear sensible footwear, and bring a small torch. Admission is free with donations tonight on the night to Bat Conservation Ireland. And then in Laois, the Strad Valley Woodland Railway are running steam trains for Easter on Easter Sunday and Monday, April the 21st and 22nd. The trains are operating from 12 to 4 p.m. both days, with tickets priced at only €3 for children, €7 for adults, and under fives can go absolutely free. Tickets are sold on the day at the platform, are valid for as many trips as you'd like, and the train is fully wheelchair accessible, so passengers can enjoy the lush green forest from the unique perspective of a steam train.
Excellent stuff. Thanks, Niamh. Thanks, of course, also to Esther and Jean. Thanks to our lovely audience for coming along today. Ooh, I hear sirens in the background. What have ye done? Right, okay. Thanks also to Fergus and Matthew and everyone here at the 12 for everything they've done for us today, especially the lovely food they provided today. Thanks to Lidl for the delicious wine, Paul Buckland and Andy Knightley on sound here today, Sifra O'Donovan, Alicia McKenna, Niamh Hassel, young Sifra Hassel for helping out earlier on, Claire Collins, Simon Tierney and Michael Quilligan back at base. We'll have a show on Easter Monday. There won't be with me doing it. I'm on my holidays. Ivan's up next on News Talk. Have a lovely weekend. We leave you now with Socks in the Frying Pan. Good luck.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.